Andrew Swilliam W. from Phoenix. He is our first speaker. Let's welcome him.
Hi. I'm William and I'm an addict. I want to start by just welcoming you all to Nocona One. I appreciate y'all being here. Hopefully, this weekend for me will be a success either way. It already is, from what I've experienced already. No matter what happens in the next 20 minutes or an hour. So, how y'all doing? Everybody good? I just wanted to picture a bunch of mouthless people yelling at me. So, there's a couple of reasons this convention will remain important to me or successful in my eyes. You know, Northern Arizona has been a big part of my recovery. Not only here, I've lived in Flagstaff. I participated. In Verde Valley, this area, being of service, as well as I started in recovery here. My clean date's July 4th of 2008, and I had just moved to Prescott quite a few months earlier before I got clean. So this is kind of one of those moments that's kind of full circle to now be living where I was using and come up here to share my experience, strength, and hope. So thank you for all being here. The other reason that this will remain in my eyes success already is because what this commitment's done for me. You know, it's been a weird year for a lot of us. You know, when things kicked off, the favorite meeting that I had where I got a lot out of it, we were breaking down some literature and line by line sometimes, whether it be line by line or paragraph by paragraph, and, you know, that meeting's closed. And I had a tradition study that I got invited to with another sponsorship group, another sponsorship family. I was the only one not in that family. And show up to this gentleman's house, and we'd sit around the table, and we'd share what we'd written, our experience with that, and COVID had coming around, and they just weren't comfortable sitting around the table in their home. So we tried it on Zoom, and the predecessors that were in that group just didn't get the same feeling out of it. So that's dissolved, right? So, and I'm not the most disciplined person in the world, you know? So as those things have dissolved, this commitment, when it's come along, got me back into reading some literature as well, helped me to start sitting down and being quiet again and meditating. And with that, for me, usually comes prayer. So it's two from the 11th step. Anytime I roll into one, the other's close behind. And anytime I'm sitting quietly, you know, the next day goes a little bit easier, and I'm more connected with the others around me. So for that, Nocona One has a strong place in my heart already. So thank you all for being here. I love Prescott. You know, I sometimes wish I didn't move on from here. And when I rolled into town, you know, it was on courtesy from another county court card. And you know, I showed up with a family member. Family member gave me a chance to get up here and get out of where I was at. And you know, I showed up at another Christian fellowship, and that just wasn't feeling right for me. And I couldn't come back in the next week and tell them, you know, that I what I'd done. Just didn't feel right. And was going to IOP, and everybody was in my way. You know, I was going to these counseling meetings, and the counselor just happened to go to Narcotics Anonymous. And, you know, I have a first meeting story, like a a lot of people have that I truly remember from this area, walking into a room full of people and somebody sharing, and I couldn't even look you in the eye. And I was probably strung out at the time too. So, as that moved along, and I was in Prescott, and in a few months, every couple weeks I would relapse, and I can't even really say that it was a relapse, because I wasn't sure I wanted to get clean yet. But there was that constant process over and over. So I can tell you from coming to meetings and hearing the readings that we a lot of times take for granted. We hear them every time a meeting starts, right? Some of those things did sink in for me. You know, I heard honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness, and I couldn't absorb what everybody was sharing, but I could absorb those little pieces. Once people started sharing, I was more worried about what I was going to say or what was going on around me, and I couldn't take in a lot of the other things. But as those things sunk in a little bit and I worked on them, a few months come by, and some other things happen, right? The topic today is the gift of desperation, and I can share with you that after a few months of being around and absorbing some of what you guys had to offer, I said a prayer. And it'd probably been the first prayer I've said in years. And it was pretty simple. You know, I can't do this alone. Please help me, you know. And I'm not going to tell you things changed right at that moment. And really, that's, as we talk about the topic, get the desperation. It changes differently for everybody, right? Everybody has their own bottom that we talk about, but we all have our own different pain points. And the desperation is defined as loss of hope, and where I begin to lose hope and give up might be a little bit different from the next person. And hopefully I could share a couple things that got me clean, as well as something that was going on in my recovery that has to do with being desperate and not having or seeing a different way. Our literature talks about it great. You know, there's a lot in step one that talks about the degradation, and as you go through that process and things get worse and worse and that whole bit, right? But again, the readings that I believe one of them that we read here today, Why Are We Here, also talks about it pretty well. And it suggests that there's three disturbing realizations, right? There's three disturbing realizations. And, not too long after I said that prayer, still going to that IOP class and trying to take some suggestions, and I wasn't making the best decisions still. You know, I couldn't drive my car. I'm in a small town again. I'm not in Phoenix anymore. All the cops already know me again, right? Can't drive down the street without them already recognizing me. So one of the suggestions was I needed to ask for rides and ask for help. And, one of the gentlemen that I picked, he was graduating IOP that night and wanted to go celebrate. And sure, that sounds like a great idea, right? So off to Phoenix we go. And I can tell you that night scared me enough that these realizations became kind of true for me, you know. That was the point in my recovery that I had kind of lost hope that I could manage my addiction anymore. And that's the first one. We are powerless over our addiction and our lives had become unmanageable, right? For so long I had some ideas of how to manage my addiction, and over the years it had continued to get worse. But I did not see it when I walked in the door as a problem, right? I was still not hurting anybody. It was what I was choosing to do with my life. I still didn't believe at that point that addiction was a disease. As you hear a lot of people say, but when I walked in the door, I didn't believe that. So, you know, that night had scared me to the point where I knew I was going to jail. I was going to prison. If I continued to do what I was doing. So I had some hard decisions and changes to make, and that's the second disturbing realization. It talks about we're not responsible for our disease, but we are responsible for our recovery, right? I wish I could have heard that in a meeting 8 months earlier or 10 months earlier, whatever that timeline was. It's that all that's really fuzzy to me. I still don't remember a lot of the things that occurred through those time periods. But and the third and final disturbing realization it talks about is that we can no longer blame people, places, or things for our addiction. We must face our problem and face our feelings. And, you know, I didn't catch these things as I was walking through them. You know, it's still all in retrospect for me to this day. As I do some step work and as I work with another man or as I'm sitting in a meeting breaking down some literature and listening to other people's thoughts and feelings on it, something sticks with me. It makes me think a little bit and it nags at me for a while till I'm able to really see what that's all about. It'd be wonderful, and ideally, as we talk about loss of hope, it'd be wonderful if I could see those things before I get to that point. And I hope that's what the program does for me at this point. If I continue to do those things that we talk about, you know, go to meetings and get a sponsor and be of service, I can't tell you how much or how important service in this particular area was to me. Even when I moved away and moved to Flagstaff, probably for the first year, I still held a position in this particular area, and I'd run back here every week for my home group, right? I'm still afraid of change. Still afraid of the next thing coming around. Not that I'm afraid to go do it, but I need that comfortable feeling. And I moved, you know, again, I'm back down in Phoenix, and every time I go to a new area, it's like starting over, and I feel like a newcomer. And being a part of something does help with that. And, you know, that's really the other thing that I forgot to share, that why this is, or maybe I did share it and just didn't hear myself. why Nakona's a success, you know. As I sat down and began to read literature and was meditating on a daily basis and spending some quiet time, it's gotten me in touch again with my higher power. And what service normally does for me is it connects me with you, you know. I take a service commitment in an NAA, I show up, and I build relationships, whether it be individual on a one-on-one level or if I'm taking a group position, and it builds a relationship with more than one person. But this particular service commitment for me has brought me closer to my higher power once again, right? Because, again, I have a problem with discipline, self-discipline, right? I have a problem following through on the things that I know are good for me. I know it's good for me, and I should be doing it, and I still can't seem to, on a consistent basis, make sure I'm doing those things. So I am truly grateful for the program and it being there to help guide me back to those things so I don't have to ride it till the wheels fall off, because that's the one thing I knew before, right? Over the span of my using, 15 years, 18 years, whatever it was, it became my one coping mechanism, and I did not even see that. I had no clue that I was afraid of my feelings. had no clue that it was fear. Once again, in retrospect and in having a program, I can deal with some of those things and get them out of my way. And I was afraid of everything when I got here in Prescott. I told you I couldn't drive down the street without the cops in Prescott Valley recognizing me. I couldn't pick up my mail. If I did, it was sitting on the table, right? Every 3-4 weeks, I was going to the post office to get my mail started again. It's just, there was so many little things. Started taking some suggestions, and little by little, they start changing. In the end of the Why Are We Here, it talks about those things being able to change with the program and those things available to us. So it doesn't mean that my life's perfect and that everything's going to go well. I've experienced hopelessness in recovery as well. One of our other books that I can't think of the name of right now talks about it well. It talks about desperation is hopefully not disposed upon us all the time as well as passion is. It doesn't come easily, right? It says that passion is not like desperation. It's an energizing force that it can propel us forward. So I haven't had a lot of desperate moments in my life, and I don't have a lot of passionate moments in my life. There's not a million things in my life that I know I have to be doing, that I'm just drawn to. NA has begun to fill that void in my life. So it's one thing and one group in my life that I've actually participated in on a willing basis, instead of, being told to do. So, so as my recovery progressed, another situation came along, sure, a lot of you have experienced, and I don't notice often, it probably happens more than I know, but I had a visceral reaction to an emotional situation, right? That pit in your stomach. I don't connect with those things regularly, but when this happened, I just knew that everything I'd been working for and towards was over. Just wasn't going to happen. I couldn't, again, see what was really going on or that there was a different way. But at that moment, I had lost hope. And it is not... again, something that happens very often for me. But what that occurred, and being having some clean time under my belt now and hanging out for a year, and I maybe hopefully was of service by that point and doing some other things, instead of going back to what felt normal for me, I got a sponsor that I connected with and started doing some work. So instead of my normal reaction, which would have been picking up, I tried something different this time. And I was still pretty young in recovery at that point. I still wasn't sure I even wanted to be here. That is the beauty of this program for me. I don't have to wait till I'm totally devoid of all hope. I do know one thing that I'm passionate about, and I love connecting with other people. I like helping other people. It'd be beautiful to turn that into a way of life, and with NA I can do that. You know, some people find it in their work lives and in other places. You know, that just hasn't happened for me. Right? A job is a job. I don't have a career. And actually, you know, in this last year, I've changed jobs two or three times. I held on to the same job in recovery for the first decade. I was good at what I was doing, not moving up, pays going down instead of going up for a long period of time. I was just afraid, once again, to step out of that situation and do something different. And I can't tell you it's been easy over the last year. I've even had my first trauma over one of the jobs I picked. I ended up in an ambulance and half of my face burned off. I've changed jobs two or three times, and I did some odds and ends jobs. Had some friends help me out with side work until, you know, this last situation has come along, and being willing to make two or three different changes, I think I finally found something that's going to stick and work for me, and something that I'm happy with. So, when we're talking about helping people, you know, Lewis Carroll said one of the deep secrets of life is that all that is really worth doing is what we do for other people. And you know, if I can't really say I'm passionate about something else, that speaks worlds to me. I do enjoy helping the addict next to me, being of service to the fellowship. I just still not comfortable enough in my life to find other places to go out and do that. So I'm quite comfortable doing it here. We all find different places to do it. This isn't one of my particular favorite positions. But again, what I could say is it has helped reconnect me. So as I shared with you earlier, I'm glad that, you know, desperation isn't bestowed on me on a regular basis, that I don't have to wait until that happens. And it's through Narcotics Anonymous that I found that. Working with the sponsor and working the steps, I did not have any clue it would help or change my life. Matter of fact, I thought the exact opposite when I got here. And those are some of the things that really, really helped define me, so I don't have to go through those same things anymore. From the time I walked in until the time that I said that first solo prayer, because I'll tell you the truth, when I got here, I didn't realize, you know, in meetings that we were even praying. I was so disconnected at that point that I didn't even recognize, you know, when we said the serenity prayer, that I was praying. I would participate in it, I wasn't afraid of it, but I didn't really recognize what was going on around me a lot at that point. So recovery has become a part of my life. By working steps, I've come to accept that I do have a higher power, that I believe in something, and I've come to that very slowly. If I came in here and you had told me what to believe in, I don't think I would have stuck around very long. So I do appreciate that about Narcotics Anonymous, and I think I skipped over a lot of stuff pretty quickly that I did have. Went back and forth, so I'm just glad that NA does help me have some kind of passion. So I appreciate y'all being here and being a part of my recovery. Thank you.
Thank you. Let's give it another round of applause. All right, before we start our next speaker, just a quick announcement. If anyone is parked at the tow-away zone where you're not supposed to be parking, can you please move your vehicle? Thank you. All right, we have, All right, I'm pleased to introduce Erica Kay from Flagstaff, Arizona. Let's give her a round of applause.
Okay. I don't know. Hey, my name's Erica and I'm an addict. Let's see here. So I'm grateful to be here, and it being the first one is pretty gnarly and exciting, and I'm happy to be a part of it. So my clean date is July 5th, 2012, and and that is so fucking long. Oh my God, I'm sorry. Okay, so don't, I'm gonna try to, okay, I have four real bad addictions I still participate in, and that is caffeine and carbs and candy and cussing. And so I'm gonna try my very best to not participate a whole bunch with the cussing. Anyway, it's a little vulgar sometimes, but anyway, my addiction started the first time that I did anything that altered my mind, whether it be good or bad. I mean, I think I was in it to win it from the gate, you know. If I didn't have to feel an emotion, it was the ticket. If good or bad, like left or right, I personally would rather feel nothing than to feel any emotion. I really seriously thought it was going to kill me when I first got here. I thought feeling emotions was going to kill me dead. I was going to die. And so... living a miserable life was much more of a solution for me than participating in life as like a feeling emotional person. I just wasn't going to do that. So when I first started smoking weed and drinking about it when I was 12 years old, and the last time I picked up, I was 38. I had 26 years of trying to make it work. I mean, my addiction wasn't about ever trying to quit so much. It was more about, like, just trying to not get arrested, you know. And please let me just not have the consequences of my behavior and just have the consequences of how I used, you know. Like, I just wanted to be high, numb, and that's all I wanted to do. So I'm just going to pinpoint a few little, because I was also very addicted to criminal activity. I just wanted everything for nothing. And I really was an entitled victim, you know, like, you needed to be happy about giving me your shit and, woe is me, you know, like, woe is me, like, you don't want to pay my bills. And, anyway, so, around 18, 19, the state of I was born and raised in Southern California, and around 18, 19, the state of California and my family decided I shouldn't live in California any longer, and so I moved to Alaska. And so I just thought it was, like, pretty rewarding to traffic methamphetamine from Southern California to Alaska for the next couple years. And that was a mind-altering event. Like, that gave me, like, the yay me vibe of getting away with something, you know, and I didn't realize how addicted to that I was until I got clean this time, and I still fucking thought I could steal, you know what I mean? But anyway, we'll get there. So I then, you know, things got bad, you know, and then I went to rehab because I got pregnant at 24 years old, and they said, you probably don't want to use drugs when you're pregnant, and I was like, I can't not do that. And so, like, let me go to rehab, and they'll fix me. And when I was there, they told me I might be angry and have anger issues, and then you know what I said. Well, I gotta go, you know, and that should have been a gift necessary for my desperation to end there, but I just chose not to open it. You know what I'm saying? I just said, no, I'm gonna make the sack work. You know, I'm not gonna open the gift. And so I just continued on and continued on, and then I made another baby. And I want to say that not being a present parent was a gift good enough for desperation, but I just didn't open that motherfucker either. You know what I'm saying? Like, I was through the door, you know, I was going to raise my kids through the door kind of thing. And, you know, like us all, or just like go play video games, or, you know, just fix yourself a Hot Pocket, shit like that at 3 and 4 years old. It's like, what? I mean, like, anyways, so I'm not proud of it, but the only way that I don't sit in that guilt and shame is to not be that today. And so that's an amazing thing that Narcotics Anonymous gives us. It gives us the ability to live two lives in one lifetime, and that's fucking sick, dude. It's amazing. And the only reason that, like, I get so excited is because, like, I was so not excited. Like, I was miserable, but I was going to make it work. I didn't portray that I was miserable. I didn't think that I was miserable. It was only until I found joy that I realized the opposite of that was misery, and that that was my life. I participated for 26 years, solid, every day, all day long. And that's another thing. Solid, every day, all day long. And that's a lot of work. You know that when we come, like when we get clean and we don't, when we get like these regular fucking jobs, it's hardly any work. Like, you just have to go like for 8 to 10 hours a day, and it's okay, it's doable. You know, like, we work 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 30 days, 365. I mean, we made it. We worked hard. I mean, I worked hard. Y'all worked hard. I'm sure y'all worked hard. Anyways, so that first rehab was at 24, so didn't open that one. And then the next rehab I went to was at 32. And that one was because, you know, those opioids, man, they make you fucking, you try to stop those for a minute and your body jerks and you seize and you freaking, all this craziness happens. Like, with methamphetamine, you could just sleep that shit off, you know what I'm saying? But, like I was just trying to not seize out, you know, I was just, and so I went to rehab for that one. And that one, I sort of opened that gift. I stayed clean for 3 days shy of 18 months, you know what I'm saying? And so I was like, I got some motherfucking recovery, so I'm good, you know what I mean? I got this foundation where I haven't used like numerous days in a row, so no matter what, it's never going to be like what it was. You know what I'm saying? Until, like, it was what it was. You know what I mean? Like, and then it was, like, what it was, and then times 9,000. You know what I'm saying? And like, I just choose to not open that gift either. I was just going to, like, make it work. That's what I was going to do. I was going to make it work. And the whole time, I didn't even think that I was, like, trying to make it work. That was just the life I knew. And I am who I am. And this is who I am. And I'm going to use till the day I die. And if you don't like it, you don't need to be around me. And blah, 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 blah. Well, the reality was, is I never really had anybody that wasn't using like me around me, because, like, I couldn't tolerate them and they couldn't tolerate me. And anyways, yeah. So, didn't open that gift either. You know what I'm saying? Like, I was like I didn't have real people around me. Sincere, honest, joyous, loving, kind. Like, all that stuff was, like, soft and sorry and weak. And, like, you don't want, like, kind people around you, because then you have to, like, hustle them. And, like, it was just amazing the different mentality I had using and clean, you know? And so the last time I got clean, there was numerous, you know what I mean, like all of our yuck yucks. We just participate in stealing cars and fucking robbing this and doing this and hustling that and getting rid of this and, you know, all this, all the shit. And so the last time was, I was 38, and I got this partner, and we were going to make robbing these doctor's offices. She was going to write the scripts, and I was going to, like, get rid of the scripts. We were, like, going to partner up, right? And we did it, and it was great, and it was good, and it was wonderful, and it was awful, and it was ugly, and it was sick, and it was disgusting, and it was amazing, and it was all those things, right? And I was just trying to make it work. And I felt like we were gonna get caught. And so we dissolved our relationship, and like less than 3 weeks later, she got caught and was put into county. And so I needed an income, you know, and I mean, heaven forbid, I already had a job, but I needed an income to supplement my income so that I could be high every day, all day long, you know, because it takes work. You know, we work hard at getting high every day, all day long. And so, like, I give this much to my recovery, and that's why I'm so fucking excited all the time, because, like, I only got to work this fucking hard right here, and I get this life worth living, and it's amazing. Anyway, but it didn't come easy, you know. I kept not opening those gifts. And so this last time, I went to county, right? And she did. And then I decided I was just going to start robbing houses, see, because I need to have some sort of income, right? And that didn't work out so good. And so I was just robbing people's houses, and I was having yard sales with their shit on the weekend, you know what I mean? Because I didn't have to have no partner, you know, like there didn't have to be any affiliation with anybody. It could be just all me, right? So anyways, I got caught. There was a little teapot episode where the dope dealer, she was this elderly woman, and she had this curio cabinet. And so I stole these teapots for her because she could put it in her curio cabinet. Well, anyway, it was too big and yada, yada, yada. So I put it out in my yard sale, and this guy came in. See, I had foul mouth. This guy came out and bought these teapots and happened to own, like, a consignment store. And the person I robbed came in and said, those are my teapots. And he said, I just bought it from this bitch over here. And so it took about 3 weeks, and then, you know, I was hemmed up too. So anyway, I go into county. And there she is, my girl. And she's looking at 38 for the federal of the stealing of the scripts, right? So I decided to open the gift, you know what I mean? And the gift was when the door shut in county, the door shut, and it knocked me thinking I was God out of me and me being willing to receive something bigger than myself and not be large and in charge and live the same fucking life I've always lived and to maybe just maybe do some stuff different. That was the first gift I opened, not being in charge, not knowing everything, not thinking the way I was doing it was working, you know, like that was my reality. It wasn't working, but I just kept for all those years, 26 years, I just kept thinking I can make this work. I can make this work. And I worked so hard at trying to make it work. And the reality was, is it wasn't even a fight worth fighting. And this is finally the fight worth fighting. And I'm participating in it today. And it's amazing. It's so weird because who would have thought, like, the lives that we lived, we'd be kicking it in a place with all these people that ain't using, ain't trying to get high, ain't trying to come up. I mean, I can't even imagine this. Like, my whole life was never anything affiliated with not trying to come up. Like, every single thing was about a hustle and a manipulation and trying to be scandalous and ugly and I want your shit and I want you to be happy about it. And if you're not, then I'm just going to take it. And ugly, 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 vindictive. I mean, the reality is it's like all those things were perfect stepping stones to not participate in that ugly life any longer. Like, I needed to participate like that so that I could be grateful for the life that I participate in now. Because if I didn't, I think I would have thought that I was boring or some shit. I don't know. Like, I think I would have. I don't know exactly. But so I decided to open that first gift, and that first gift was the desperation that I was looking at, like, 8.75 for the one house, you know, like. And I felt so grateful that they didn't catch me for anything but that one house. I felt so grateful that they didn't catch me for all of the different doctor's offices that we had handled. I felt so grateful that the gift was the willingness to receive something bigger than myself. The gift was the willingness to be grateful for no matter what I got, no matter I wasn't going to be pissing in the 10 toilet if God was willing. And if he was, it was only 8.75. I wasn't looking at 38 like her. And that's a big fucking deal, because the reality is if we're not grateful for what we should, and by the way, most of us never look at what we should be facing ever, okay? And so, like, I was grateful that I was just looking at one motherfucking burglary, you know what I mean? I was like, okay, I'll do whatever you say, whatever you say. And so the reality for me was I was in jail, and I was grateful. I was grateful. I got served with the papers. They were taking the kids again, you know what I mean? And I was grateful because maybe they would have a chance, because if they continue to get raised by someone like me, they didn't have much of a chance. Their odds were screwed, because I just thought it was good enough. You know, the outside was good enough. There was always a new car. There was always somewhat of a house. You know, there was always those outside things. And that was the thing. The gift of desperation was the self-loathing, was the self-hatred, was the insecurity, was the zero self-worth, was the zero love, was the zero like. I didn't like shit. I didn't love shit. I only loved the sack. If it wasn't the sack, I didn't care. I didn't care about anything. And I'm not saying that, like, with joy. I'm saying that with the reality of my existence as it was, and that I get to live this reality, the existence that I live today, which is this, which is I love my life today. I love the people in my fucking life today. I don't like my life all the time because I still have a job and bills. Oh yeah. Like when I first got clean, I was all about like, oh, let me just have my kids back. Let me just have a house. Let me just have a car. Let me just have this. And then all those things are the things that make me want to use now. You know what I'm saying? Like all those things. Like, so I have to remember that I prayed for the things I have now, and to live in the gratitude that not everybody gets that opportunity. My girl still, she's not out of prison until January 2022, okay? And she got served the day I got released. She got served the day I got released to 10 flat for what we were doing. So my God, let me walk through that with someone that fucking close to having that be my reality, for me to acknowledge the fact that I don't want to go back, and that I was given this gift from God, or whatever you want to call it. I call my higher power God. You know what I'm saying? Like gift of desperation, you know, like grateful or dying. You know what I'm saying? Like, I mean, God could be whatever you want it to be. I don't even care. And it wasn't until I got a God that I was okay with whatever y'all's God was or wasn't. You know what I'm saying? So the thing is for me is like, the gift of desperation is a huge, gigantic thing that got me here. But the gifts of recovery are what keep me here. You know what I'm saying? The gifts of recovery are these things like waking up in the morning, not having to roll over and roll a bowl or fucking think about how I'm going to connive and weasel this, this, and that, and the other thing all day, every day. You know, going to work and your mind's all playing tricks on you. Or it's not, and you're just a trick. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't even matter. Like, it's all perception. It's all perception. My perception today is that I'm grateful. My perception today is that if it wasn't for the ugliness, I wouldn't have the beauty. Or at least I wouldn't acknowledge it to the degree that I acknowledge it. Because, you know, like, sometimes I sit there and I go, like, damn, dude, why did I have to waste so many years, like, you know, with over and over, like, because there was county and that state and this state, and, you know, like, over and over and over. And, why didn't I get it? Well, it wasn't my time to receive the gift. I never opened the present. And so today I get to. So when I first got out of jail, I was so blessed. So what they gave me, the gifts they gave me, were 5 years probation. I was like, hell yeah, dude, I'll piss in that cup over there rather than 10 toilet all day long, right? Okay, and then they gave me like, okay, you have to do hundreds and hundreds of community service hours. All right. I mean, I always thought that me not robbing the community was enough community service, but obviously that's not what the court thought, you know what I mean? And so then, they gave me, you need to pay that last victim $12,000 restitution. And I was like, grateful. And why was I grateful? Because after I paid that back in 2 years, I realized I could pay a car payment. You know, like, it's all about the perception of what takes place in your life, right? And so then they say, oh, you got to go to rehab, and you got to go to a halfway house, and you got to go here, and you got to go there. You got to do that matrix program. And no, bitch, I get to go to a rehab, and I get to go to a halfway house and get kicked out and live on the streets and all that stuff that took place. But whatever, you know, it was all growing. I didn't use through it. You know what I'm saying? And that was a gift. That was a gift, not using no matter what. No matter what, not using no matter what. And not having to study for those piss tests. Oh, my God, that was a gift. That was a gift, you know, to just pee and it be clean and not have to worry about it. Oh, my God, I'd never done it that way before. And that was a miracle. That was so amazing. And so that was the gift, right? And so they said a halfway house, and then they said the matrix program, and then they said 5 years probation, and then they said, well, we want to give you off early. And I said, what? I said, okay. And then they called the victim, and she's like, oh, hell no. And so they had to go with that. But then I had paid everything back and done everything the way that they wanted me to do it. And I had been like willing to be not only do what they say, but be happy about doing it, be grateful for them allowing me to do it, for me to be able to send money to prison and not have to be there to receive it. Oh my God, that was so gigantic for me, to me to send letters there and not to be the one waiting for them to call my name to get that letter. Oh my God, that was like the best thing that could ever have been offered to me. And so I believe for me, the gifts of desperation were what got me here, but the gifts of recovery are what will keep me here. And that's all I have.
Thank you. Let's give a round for both.